This podcast is Challenging Opinions and is presented by William Campbell.
Thank you for downloading the Challenging Opinions podcast for Christmas Day, December 25th, 2017. The crossover between politics and comedy isn't all going in the one direction these days. In this episode, I talk to a political comedian, and we have a look at one country where the theatre of politics is having serious consequences. But who's to blame?
Challenging Opinions is the podcast where ideas are tested. Whether you are left or right, conservative or progressive, devout or skeptic, what matters is the strength of your argument, not the strength of your voice.
Alex Kack is a political comedian and commentator. He's recently founded the Bull Moose Review political website. Alex, Tom Lehrer said that political satire became obsolete when Henry Kissinger was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. How do you think political comedy is going these days?
You know, I think back to a few years ago, Jon Stewart was a guest on some program, and it was during the Bush years, and he was talking about the idea that, you know, his job had gotten so much easier because it was just, you know, he had stopped making jokes and started just reading the headlines.
This was during the George W. Bush era, perhaps.
Yeah, that's exactly when it was. The far off land of 2006 and 2007. But, you know, we got an 8-year break from that. We got an 8-year break in the United States where everything didn't seem surreal. Unfortunately, we're back in the thick of that. I think it's interesting, the approaches we're taking now, because it's hard to joke about, this. It's hard to joke about the state of the world because it seems so dark and it seems so bleak, but it's also so absurd.
But I mean, like, back then there was The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and now it seems like the whole of politics is being covered from a comedy point of view. These almost everybody has one of these shows. Why haven't you got one yet?
Probably exactly because everybody does. It was interesting because I used to run a monthly stand-up comedy showcase that was all political in nature. So we'd book 4 or 5 acts, and they would go up, and their sets would be entirely, satire and political commentary based. And a year ago, the format worked great. As the election season wore on and the reality of Donald Trump became just that, more and more of a reality, it almost got impossible to one, differentiate yourself from everyone else. It was hard to find a new angle because everything was just so 24/7. What is this man doing? You know? And, and then frankly, also how do you cover something like this? I think Jimmy Fallon kind of stumbled into that a little bit when he had him on his show during the campaign. How do you find the line consistently between, you know, fairly covering something and fairly discussing something, and then also normalizing it? You know, where is that line? How do you approach something that, frankly, probably you should be so biased against with any shred of, unbiased or journalistic integrity or anything like that? It just got maddening, honestly, at a certain point. So it's not to say maybe I won't, but for the time being, it's just, I think maybe I need to look at it through a different, maybe more somber lens.
Okay, because I want to have a look at that, because however bad things are in some of the countries in the United States or even in Western Europe, maybe, you know, we think that we have it bad, but in reality, compared to the rest of the world, most people living in the Western developed world are doing amazingly well compared to many hundreds of millions of people who live in the third world. And you wrote recently about Venezuela, and you were saying, and there's a running catastrophe in Venezuela. Venezuela should be a rich country. It's got a huge amount of oil, and it's falling to pieces. I wasn't able to find the source for it, but I read that the average Venezuelan lost about 15 pounds in weight over the past year just through hunger. You're writing an article here and saying that, you know, it's not all the left's fault. How could it be anything else?
So it's not that it's and this is the issue of Venezuela. This is where I wrote the article. And so I want to be clear from my point of view where I'm coming from here, because I'm certainly not a communist, and I'm not really a socialist either, for that matter. Mm-hmm. But I think, especially in the West and especially in the United States, we have a tendency to try to take global political ideologies and fit them into the lens of our own electoral politics, and then weaponize either their successes or their failures. My article on Venezuela was born of a lot of that commentary, both that I saw on a national level through the different media outlets, but also what I saw in conversations that I had with people, or, you know, even just kind of social media chatter, where people were really quick to say one of two things I noticed. Either they were trying to blame kind of socialism as an ideology, or they were trying to turn it back on the US and the UK and say, this is a legacy of imperialism. But when you look at Venezuela, it's not really either of those things. What you have, and first off, and this is an important thing, is that the brand of socialism that you got underneath Chavez and now Maduro is very different. It's a subsect. It's something that they have really kind of created themselves, this whole way that they've ran the government, because it's they've privatized certain industries. They've made other ones public. You know, they have completely, almost hostily taken over entire industries, yet they have done the opposite with things that the Venezuela government already held and privatized them. That is very unique. And I think what you also have to look at with Venezuela, and this was the title of the article, was that it was a failure of common sense.
But hold on for a second. First of all, Alex, we should, for people maybe who are not quite so up to date with it, we should give a very, very brief history of Venezuela. There was essentially a slightly democratic but not very democratic right-wing government up to, I think, the late 90s in Venezuela.
Correct.
As is common in South America and in much of the third world, there was a very small, very rich elite and a vast number of people who are very poor. At the same time as there was an oil boom, this left-wing president, Chavez, who died a couple of years ago, this guy came to power and he stated that he would redistribute the oil wealth. And in truth, he did a lot of things like social programs and health programs for the poor, which made him very popular amongst them. But the management of the economy is appalling. And I was listening to BBC reports where they essentially described how now everything in a hospital has to be bought from the military, the soldiers who basically looted the entire place because they're not getting their salaries. A blind eye turned to them looting the hospital. And if you want anything in a hospital, you have to first bribe the soldiers who are on the door to get the supplies. Literally just the number of calories that people are taking in, that the amount of food that they can eat has dropped dramatically. You have a country that should be as rich as Saudi Arabia that is poor and rapidly getting poorer. Nobody can make any excuse for that, can they?
Well, no, and that's the thing, is that you hit on exactly what the issue was, and that's kind of the thesis, if you will, of the article I wrote, which was that it was the management, and it was the executive management by two men, Chavez and Maduro. I think what we also see here is the idea, if you were to move a country if you were to fully commit to an ideology such as socialism, as Chavez did, and say we are now a socialist left, far left wing country, there is something to be said and how you pick and choose, you know, what is going to be part of a private free market and what is going to be publicly owned. And I think this was a huge issue, not just with the oil, which is what, of course, was the majority of exports for the country. It wasn't just the fact of the oil, which is what we're always talking about, but we need to look at how they chose other industries and how they chose to manage other industries. You were talking about calories, and food is, I think, one of the real crucial issues here. Lots of Venezuela, when Chavez was elected the first time, was still very agrarian, and they produced a lot of their own food themselves. either through public programs or through just private family farming. They had a robust kind of two-front system there. Chavez decided to try to modernize lots of this, and what he wound up doing instead of, which would be a little bit more of a common sense approach to this, nationalizing the food production, he nationalized the food distribution and effectively just kind of shut down their entire production mechanism in Venezuela. So what they started doing was importing and purchasing food at retail cost from the United States, from Western Europe, from other Latin American countries. And the bulk, when you look at the numbers, the bulk of their import for food was coming from Mexico and the U.S., both of whom they would have got increasingly hostile to between, 2001 and, 2017 now under Maduro. This was against
isn't it the case, Alex, that it's almost irrelevant whether it's whether they're socialist or any other system. The problem is that they're idiots. That, for example, they attempted to control the distribution of some products, one of them being toilet paper, and people literally couldn't afford it. So they set a maximum price for toilet paper that nobody would be allowed to sell toilet paper above that price. And the immediate effect of that was that nobody sold any toilet paper at all. And you had ridiculous situations where you had vehicles coming across the border from Colombia being searched for contraband toilet paper. Surely anybody should have known. And of course, Venezuela was a massive sugar producing country. They produced sugar cane. The government brought in a maximum legal price for sugar, which meant that every farmer who had previously been growing sugar cane stopped growing sugar cane because they couldn't make money at this price that was supposedly set to protect the poor, to such an extent that Coca-Cola had to pull out of the country. I don't know if that's an advantage or a disadvantage, but in any case, you couldn't get Coca-Cola because Coca-Cola couldn't get sugar to make their product.
Well, and that's again, you exactly hit on it, and that is kind of the thesis of my article again, is that they're idiots. I mean, I think you said it best there. These are two men who, frankly, have no business, forget the economy, but managing anything. And when you look at the decisions they made at every level of their government, neither one of them, Chavez nor Maduro, did anything that you could describe as common sense. They did not take necessary protections. You're talking about, let's go back to oil. You're talking about two executives now who have decided to go all in, to stake their country's entire future on oil in the 21st century. Like, let's just look back at the history of oil prices, from 2000 till now. But let's also talk about the events that have driven that. We have war in the Middle East. We have, by most scientists' estimations, hit peak oil. We have the rapid expansion of alternative energy.
Even before you get to that, if you have a whole load of oil under the ground, as Venezuela does, yeah, you can say, okay, maybe that's not stable into the future, that alternative energies will take over that market. But today, if you have a whole load of oil under the ground, surely you should be able to just dig it out and sell it in order to be able to feed the people.
Of course, but the issue does go back to, do you bet your nation's entire future on one commodity? And that really
a lot of Venezuelans would be happy if they could get bread today. They're not so much concerned about the future because they're hungry now.
No, but this isn't a problem of right now. This is a problem that was happening right now. Mm-hmm. And this was a decision failure that was made going back 16 years ago. And that's the issue, is we have to step back and look at what all has caused this. And when you see that it's this pattern of dysfunction amongst these executives, and this is the issue that I want to stress, really, especially to Americans, is that this is not an ideological failing. This is not a failure of other nations, a supposed, Western countries and their intervention. There are a history there, certainly, to look at, but the immediacy of this is all in this, last two decades. What caused these failures and these breakdowns more than anything was the leadership of these two men. Mm-hmm. And I think that really just shows in the record, because the fact of the matter is, I think most people, if you were to just ask them point blank, if, you know, they should diversify, you know, their income streams a little bit, people understand that about their homes half the time. You know, they understand, well, we shouldn't have, you know, rely solely on this. We should invest some of our money here. It's a very common idea. The idea that you take a nation and really their entire economy and and just put it all into one thing, something with
you mentioned 95% of Venezuela's export is oil. But actually, I want to challenge you a little bit on that. And you said that Maduro and Chavez, I think you agreed with me, they're being idiots about the way they're running the economy. But if you go back to the Communist Manifesto, I think it was 1867, I might be wrong a little bit about that, but about 150 years ago with the Communist Manifesto. At the time, the economy was steel mills and coal mines. It was relatively simple. And at the time, you had people like the Rockefellers and the Vanderbilts who owned steel mills and coal mines and who decided what would happen to them, and people's lives and livelihoods were decided in smoke-filled clubs and so forth. It was plausible at the time to argue that rather than having the robber barons making those decisions, that you could have ministers of a socialist government making those decisions for the benefit of the people rather than for the benefit of the robber barons. But now, today, our economy is so much more massively complex that it doesn't matter. I don't think that, in the true sense, Chavez was or Maduro is an idiot. They're just taking on much too much. Isn't it the case that no government ever could manage an economy that is as sophisticated as it is in the 21st century, that there's just too much to do? And this is really my criticism of people on the left, that there's no way for any one organization to manage the whole economy.
Well, you know, I think you hit, we're really on two things I'd love to get into, but the first one is really, I think you hit on one of my personal favorite talking points. You know, I'm progressive. I'm on the American left in general, but I really hate the tendency that especially Americans have in politics to claim old ideologies and specifically old economic systems. And this is true very much of the right in this country as well. Really, it's actually in a mainstream sense. I think, you know, the Republican Party is a little more guilty of this than the Democrats, and in a fringe sense, the far left is very guilty of this here. Where it is, he said, the Communist Manifesto was 150 years ago, and Adam Smith was a couple of centuries ago. The idea that you would live by what is basically theoretical economics, there was no modeling done to this, there was no data collected. You know, Marx wasn't sitting there looking at hard facts or data or any type of historical record to write that document. Mm-hmm. If you know, I'm sure you've read it. There's nothing of that nature in there. It was theories he had on how to make a more egalitarian world. Adam Smith is far more detailed, but he still doesn't have any real proof to his statements to make. The idea that you want to, in the 21st century, base the welfare of an entire nation off of the ideas of one or two or three men who have been dead for three, four, or more generations it's not just asinine, it's insane to me. I'm having this conversation with you.
Hold on a second. I think, Alex, maybe you're trying to spread the blame around a little bit, because you're right. There's people who are devoted to Adam Smith as there are some other people devoted to Marx and other socialist writers. But isn't it the case that on the right, free market economics has a self-correcting mechanism that the left doesn't? On the right, there's nothing depending. You don't have the entire country, the entire economy of a country depending on a couple of key individuals. With free market economics, if a business doesn't work, it goes out of business and it's not a problem anymore. Unfortunately for Venezuelans, the Venezuelan government can't go out of business.
Well, so you're hitting on kind of two separate things here. One, I want to go back to one thing though and say that free market economics, as And we need to be clear on what we're saying there, because there's a difference between, I think, free market is how we would have really, in reality and in practice, interpreted now versus what people mean when they say free market in a stump speech, because that is really more of a commitment against these old ideologies, you know, this very libertarian idea of Austrian economics, which again is theoretical economics. These are very old ideologies that do not hold up under a microscope. In the same way that Marxism does not hold up under a microscope, it doesn't work. We've tried a number of free market initiatives in this country, in my country, the United States, and they've all frankly ended badly.
Hold on for a second. So for sure there are problems, but I think the problems that people in Venezuela have are in a different order of magnitude to the ones in the US.
Well, I think I want to go back here, because if you were to take a look at, say, Calvin Coolidge and Herbert Hoover and the Great Depression, the magnitude wasn't really that different.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the last time that we went really all in. You know, we talk a lot about Reagan, but of course, Reagan was a far more measured man economically than people want to give him credit for. And if you look at, you know, pretty much everyone who worked in his administration, they pretty fully that they were just running experiments to see what would happen. And pulled back on the ones that didn't. That's very different than the last time we went all in on an ideology that someone wrote in a book and said this will work. And this goes back to my core issue is, are you going to be married to reality in your governance, or are you going to be married to ideology? You know, you might as well be theocratic and rule based on the Quran or the Bible or whatever if you want to completely rule off of the wealth of nations or the Communist Manifesto. Because yeah. In practice, it's going to work just as well, and this
or,
is the
or just as badly.
Yeah, exactly. And this is my issue right now is that when people and this we are horrifically guilty in America of this, and so this is why I'm stressing so hard on this right now. It's not practical. It's not realistic to throw all in the 21st century, say, well, I am a socialist, I am a communist, I'm a Marxist, or to say the other thing. You know, we have major presidential candidates every year on the other side, and that's why I kind of have to point out the right, because there's no one in the Democratic Party saying that they're a fully committed Marxist, but there are people in the Republican Party who want to eliminate, you know, our internal revenue system, and, you know, I mean, one thing after another, and you know, they preach this kind of minarchist idea that we already know how it turns out, and it doesn't work.
Alex Kack, the editor and founder of the Bull Moose Review, thank you very much for talking to me.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Never miss a show. Follow at Challenging O on Twitter and like Challenging Opinions on Facebook for updates on each show's contents.
That's all for the Challenging Opinions podcast, published on December 25th, 2017. I have links to Alex's website and references to the things we covered in the show notes for this podcast on the website. And by the way, I understated it in the interview. In fact, 75% of Venezuelans have each lost an average of 19 pounds, that's about 8.5 kilos, in the current crisis. Think about that over your Christmas dinner. And if you can think of someone else who I should interview or you can suggest a topic I should cover, please let me know. I want to hear your feedback. If you like the podcast, there's one thing you can do which would really help other people to find it. Go on iTunes, give the podcast a rating, and write a short review. That really helps. There's a link on the website directly to the iTunes page. Also, please like the show on Facebook. On Twitter, you can follow the show at Challenging O and follow Alex Kack at Alex_CAC. And most importantly, subscribe to the show for free. You can use Apple Podcasts or Google Play or any other podcast app or software. There's links and an RSS feed all on the website. And if you don't use a podcast app or software, you can subscribe by email. Just enter your email address on the Challenging Opinions website. And each time a new show goes online, you'll get a simple email with a link to listen and zero spam, I promise. You can find all of that or get in touch with me at www.challengingopinions.com. Coming up next Monday, that's New Year's Day, January 1st, 2018, I'll be talking to the blogger Zach Elwood about his investigations into fake Facebook profiles and where they're coming from. The Challenging Opinions podcast is produced and presented by me, William Campbell. Thank you for listening.